Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Alan Cumming, is that you?
Yes, it's me. How are you, Christopher Sweeney?
I'm really good, thanks. How are you?
I'm good. I'm absolutely starving.
Oh.
But I've got, you know that thing when you're really hungry and you make up in your head what you're going to have?
I can't do that because it tortures me. If only you were allowed to eat on this podcast.
I know, this is it. If only there wasn't a fatwa on my eating. But I agree with it. I am all for it. I think it's absolutely right. And I rue the day that I ever munched loudly whilst talking to our lovely guests. Talking of which, what a nice segue. So our guest this week is completely al dente. She is a really amazing person. And in the business we call show that both Chris and I dabble in, she is a legend. And in, especially in the kind of the independent film world. Her name is Christine Vachon. And you will know her from, Christopher, give us a few of her top movies.
So she is a producer. She's a gay woman. And she produced films like...
She's a lesbian. We can see it. She's a lesbian.
She produced films like Boys Don't Cry, which was where Hilary Swank played a trans man.
Yes, and won an Oscar for it. And also all of Todd Haynes' films, from Poison, that was his first one onwards. And
like Carol. Did she produce
Far
Carol?
Heaven. She produced Carol. Yeah, yeah. All these great queer movies with Todd Haynes. And Velvet Goldmine is another of his. She did Goldfish. That's a big lesbian
Hedwig
film.
And the Angry Inch.
And Hedwig, yes. I shot Andy Warhol. I mean, just really, it's... And also in television, she did that version of Mildred Pierce with... Kate Winslet a few years ago. I mean, she's just done like loads of things. I'm actually working on a project with her. We're trying to sell this really fascinating story that would be a series. So fingers crossed. If there's anyone listening who would like to buy a fabulous miniseries from my production company, write to us at hello at homosapienspodcast.com.
We'll do you a good price as well. Because I'm handling the bidding. And I'm starting the bidding at 43 quid. But, write in. But I'm so excited for listeners to hear her because she's been like a hero of mine. I remember she wrote a book called Killer Films, which is about making independent films, which are, you know, trailblazing and queer and all the things that make it really hard to get off the ground in the film world. But you need these stories. Yeah. People have got to be able to see themselves represented on screen. And she is... unmatchable in that sense. She is a titan.
Absolutely.
And is the nicest person. And we had such a lovely chat. And I feel what's really cool about her. So she's kind of spanned the progression of queer cinema as well, which I think is really interesting.
Yeah. And she's just sort of a legend. She lives in the East Village, not far from me. And she's just one of these people that has been a sort of stalwart of downtown New York, the New York art scene, especially obviously the film scene, forever. And I really like her. And I'm so glad that you're going to hear her wit and wisdom.
And this was a while ago. We were all in the same place.
Yeah, this is like almost a year ago, I think, we did this interview. Things have changed a lot since then. So there's obviously no COVID references.
And now, should we?
We're saying the same things in the same time. Let's see if we can do it at the same time.
And now
it's time.
Oh, right. We're doing the whole sentence. Jesus. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Ready? And now
it's time for
Christine
Vachon.
Oh, we won't be doing that again.
How did you two first meet then?
I think we went to see you in cabaret. Yeah. We went out with you afterwards.
Yes. Yeah.
So it was probably then.
That's like
21 years ago.
There you go.
And then we had a, there was a project we had together, and that was, I had to make the call to the director saying, or to the writer, saying, because he was pissing off the investors. And I remember I was in, what's that place called? Hawaii, doing a film. And I'd had to, I was lying in my bed in, the, in my hotel room, just thought, oh God. And so basically this guy pissed off the directors, the investors. And they said, we will make this film, but he can't direct it.
Right.
So I had to call him up and say, here's the thing. Either you can have your film made.
Right.
Isn't that great? And you can't direct it. Or you can't. You can't have it made.
God, I forgot all of
that. And
wow.
It didn't go well.
Mary J. Blige says, you've got to get out your own way. I always say that to people.
She is a trooper.
She is. Are you good at, are either of you good at dishing out bad news? As a producer, right, you have to.
You must do it all the time, do you?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I just, I really just get right to the point.
Yeah,
you know?
Love it.
So I never hold it back, even if it means ruining an evening.
Yeah.
You know?
Get out of the way.
I just, and I find in a funny way, or it's not that funny, but I realize that so much of what investors, studios, etc., what they want the producer to do is to tell the director things. They basically are saying, you have to tell him or her or them no, but you can't make it seem like we're saying no.
Oh,
So it becomes very complicated.
Yes.
And that's horrible.
That's funny.
I've had to fire a couple of assistants this year. And I'm quite good at it.
I'm a good firer too.
I just say, and also I've let, because you've got to have given them warnings and things like that. You know,
right,
I think it's
right,
very important to just sort of not come out of the blue. But I always try, I always say, the last one I said, you know, this is just not your forte. This is, you should do something that you're good at. And said that you should play on your strengths and not continue to play on your weaknesses.
And then slam went the front door. I left my bag. That's my bag now.
Yeah, exactly. No, but it's you have to, and also you've, because I remember I did it once and I realised they didn't quite understand that I'd fired them a long time ago. And that was awful. I thought, oh my God, they thought I was just giving them a telling off.
Right.
My friend who has to fire people said what he does is, he starts a conversation by saying, we need to make a change.
Well, that's good.
So it's like a really soft in, but then you're committed. Because otherwise it's like, how do you...
Right.
Because unless it's the first thing you say...
Yeah.
Right.
It goes
now I just say, I'm firing you. I start off there.
And really?
I just
as they come into the room.
I say, sit down. You know, probably I said, we need to talk. Sit down. I'm firing you. And here's why.
I wanted to take you back to the beginning. So did you grow up in New York?
I actually did. I grew up in Manhattan.
So rare.
And there's not many of us.
Yeah.
Usually when somebody tells you they grew up in New York, I go, oh really, what street? And then they go, well, you know.
Yeah.
I mean,
Westchester.
Very close. Very, very close to New York. But I grew up on 118th Street and Riverside Drive.
And your dad was a photographer, is that
right? He was, yeah.
What kind of pictures?
He did probably what he is most known for is he was a WPA FSA photographer, which was a program started by Roosevelt. My father was an old dad.
Mm-hmm.
He was 20 years older than my mother. So,
same.
He was alive. He was an adult during the Depression.
Wow.
And Roosevelt started this program to document the Depression.
Oh.
So all those pictures that you see, the famous ones by Walker Evans and Dorothea Lange, Let Us Now Praise Famous Men, etc. He was in that group.
Right.
It was probably not, you know, was obviously not the most famous of them. But then he went from there to work for Look magazine, where he did all kinds of, you know, like photographed everybody from Judy Garland to John F. Kennedy to Marilyn Monroe.
Wow.
You know.
And what does FSA mean, stand for?
Farm Security Administration. Uh-huh. So
got it.
I have no idea why it's called that.
Would you say it was a creative household, or was it...
Yeah, I mean, you know, there was a family before mine.
Mm-hmm.
So I have older brothers and sisters
got it.
From the first wife, and a younger brother from the second wife. But my father died when I was 12 or 13, in there somewhere.
Mm.
And, you know, my mother was pretty young and single and not really provided for. So I guess in some ways the house became even more creative because we rented out rooms. We had one of those giant rent-controlled Upper West Side apartments. So there was always like a young student living in, you know, one or two of the spare rooms, and which was a lot of fun for me. Probably not so much fun for my mother.
But. Is it called, what do you call it, like a something eight? Classic eight or something, is it?
A classic six.
Six.
This was like, yes, this was three bedrooms and a maid's room and a giant living room and a giant dining room and one bathroom. Right. And I think, you know, the building was built in like 1919, and I think they were like, and you get a bathroom.
Right, yeah. It's so funny. I was just, have you ever been to Cape May?
Oh, I've driven through it.
It's this weird, at the bottom of New Jersey, Victorian. And luckily it became a lot, it's all Victorian. And the thing in Victorian times is that they sort of showed their wealth by having a toilet, right? And so, a loo. And, but they, of course, it was Victorian times and nobody wanted to talk about that. You could barely show an ankle.
Right.
But what they did was they actually showed architecturally their loo, like they would have a building stuck out.
It's like, why have it if not if everybody doesn't know that you have
exactly. So there's these weird sort of jutting out things that have been added and they're loos. And it's sort of thing, we'd never sort of mention it, but like, hello, look what we've got.
Right.
And then, and they kind of like have them up high and jutting out and things. It's weird sort of you know, little boxes stuck on things just to show off that you've got a pooper.
Nice.
I don't get it.
No, me neither.
I don't
well,
get
no,
it.
I kind of get it.
And what was the first movie you made, Christine?
The first movie I produced that was feature length was Todd Haynes' movie, Poison. But before that, Todd and I, with a third partner, Barry Ellsworth, had a company that made short films, which I know sounds a little like, well, that's indulgent. But remember, this was a different time. And we had some backing, and we also were able to get grants. It was just a different... But then Todd was making, when we started working together, he was making his infamous film, Superstar, the Karen Carpenter story.
Oh, with the little doll.
With the little dolls. Have you seen it?
Yeah.
Have you seen
it? I have not seen it,
you know,
but I know a lot about it.
I can give you a nice copy if you have a DVD player. I know people don't have them anymore. But I can give you a nice one because it was restored by Sundance, and I don't want to credit them in the wrong, I think it was UCLA, a few years ago.
But the reason that was very important or interesting and pivotal was because it was all with dolls, right?
It was Barbie dolls. I mean, basically, it's the story of Karen Carpenter, who was the, you know, iconic musician who died of anorexia when she was barely 30. And when you first see the Barbie dolls come out, it's like, oh, this is perfect, and there's the sweet saccharine. Although once you start to listen to their music, you do start to appreciate her voice.
There's some darkness there.
Yeah,
absolutely.
There really is. And you think, oh, this is hilarious. You know, what a great idea to tell her story with Barbie dolls. Mm. By the end of the movie, you cannot believe the performance that Barbie doll has given. You're just like, give her an Oscar, you know. And when I saw that movie, it was so beautifully crafted. And I thought, like, this is what I want to do. I want to make movies that are this provocative and this original, but are also entertaining, because it is very entertaining. Mm. And I just was like, I'm hitching my wagon to Todd.
Did you feel like you were into cinema prior to that, or was it?
I did, but I also think, you know, because I grew up in Manhattan, I could walk to the cinema, and that's what we did for fun. You know, they remember second run movie houses? I mean, they barely exist anymore.
I remember that when I first came to America in LA, there was one.
For a dollar.
I mean, we didn't have that, do we?
You know?
No. So what was that when?
That's like a movie would come out, The Godfather would come out and play, you know, in all the nice theaters. A couple months later.
Oh, okay.
You could go see it for a dollar.
If you missed it, you think, oh, that's great.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
How difficult was it as a woman to penetrate the film world?
Yeah.
Or did you not find that an issue?
I think you know, it's so hard when you're actually doing it to take a real step back. Mm. One thing I'm very sad about is sometimes people ask me who my mentor was, and they didn't really have one. Because I think the few women who were doing what I did were very like, there's one seat at the table,
Back off, lady.
Why should I give? You know, why should I help you get one that might push me off?
Right.
So it's not like that now, and I'm I am very grateful for that. I think it's. But you know, there were. Look, I think, like, especially now, when all this stuff has come out about Harvey, etc., and I always feel like there's this kind of swing to try and blame the women around him.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah,
like there's a lot of, and not just him, like with other of these, you know, guys. Like
they must have known.
Charlie Rose, etc.
Yeah.
Yes. And I feel like it's so hard to explain to somebody that it's so baked into us that powerful, you know, very, very wealthy white men are above the law. It's just baked into us. And I think it's almost like you have to recalibrate.
It's a huge recalibration as well.
And it's, you know, I think that you know, for all of us who with, you know, I mean, I certainly witnessed Harvey's bullying. Often it was directed at me. But, you know, I don't believe I really understood the extent of
it. I was really fascinated by all this, you know, Ronan Farrow's new book, and not just the horrible things that Harvey and like Matt Lauer and all those things they're accused of, but the sort of spy people they hire to, like, you know, follow them and meeting in kind of a dark corner where there was no internet. And I mean, real cloak and dagger.
This is... Is this Harvey's campaign back at Ronan Farrow or the other way around?
Yes, it was when Ronan was about to, and those girls from the New York Times were about to come out with it. So Ronan Farrow wrote, it's fascinating actually, he was working at NBC and he tried to get these stories out about, you know, he was investigating Harvey and all those things. NBC were like, no, we don't want to do that.
Wow.
They pretended that he didn't have enough
sources
and all that, but he did. And then he went to the New Yorker, and that's where his stories about Harvey Weinstein first came out, in the New Yorker. Simultaneously, there was two women, of course, whose names I can't remember, they just wrote a book about it, who are at the New York Times, and so all this came out at the same time. But those, Ronan and those women, were being, because of course, it was people, they were asking questions, and people were, Harvey's people found out, and they were investigated by this black cube thing, and all sorts of weird things went
Harvey
on.
Harvey launched that whole assault.
In Ronan's, I read the articles in the New Yorker, that, you know, they had all these meetings with Black Cube, and they had all these like people who were on their staff to be like undercover, and it's just crazy. And then they were like, you know, one secret agent, whatever you call them, befriended Rose McGowan, and she told the, you know, an elaborate deceit of how she was from a charity in England, and they were from a bank, and they wanted to empower women and blah. All undercover, these agent people from this Black Cube, employed by Harvey to sort of, you know, discredit these people before it all came out. I mean, just that alone, the degree and the organisation. It's like a, you know, must have been many people's full time jobs to not just to protect him, but to cover up and to attack the people who are trying to. And there's that as well. It's not
That's
just
right.
about the law that they have. They are empowered and they have an infrastructure. To keep it all under wraps.
Well,
that's terrifying.
Also, tell me what you think about this, but someone said in London about all these little independent film companies, and it is so hard to make stuff, and so you're so understaffed all the time, and everyone's working in their each individual microcosm, and there's nobody actually stepping out and taking a wider look, which means that you don't have a HR presence, you know, or any of those things where any of these structures, because it is just so hard to even exist, that that's why that pervasive stuff was able to happen in a way. And what someone was saying is that in London, there should be a body that is film HR, you know, and it's like an independent thing. That so then if things were happening, you could go to someone, because, for, you know, you this is your day-to-day life, so you would know far more than I, but I just thought that was an interesting concept.
It is. I mean, I think also, though, I mean, that's true. It's very, it's an industry that's very ripe for exploitation, because there's such a, it's so much about who you know, it's so much about relationships, so people can dangle those carrots in front of you in all, you know, so to speak, in all kinds of terrible ways. But I think we're at an interesting moment, because things are changing to some degree, at least optically. You know, there are, you know, there's a little bit more transparency, there's a little bit more, you know, but and there's, you know, there's certainly directors, male directors, who say to me, like, oh, it's just, it would be so much easier if I was a woman. And it's like, not really. Because I think at the end of the day, what really has to change is the gatekeepers haven't really changed. Like, when I go in and pitch something, I'm usually pitching to that same group of...
That's what I wanted to ask you, know, you. Like, is it... Yeah.
And it's... I mean, look, it's... it is getting better to some degree. But I also... that's why I think mentorship is so important. And that kind of transparency in decision-making, et cetera.
Because someone was listening to someone talk on a podcast, and they were saying this year at the Emmys, they felt like it was the first time, this was his words, that the first time it didn't feel like there was a groundswell of something beginning, but it felt like it was actually happening, that there was a readjustment. But I wondered if, when you're in your day-to-day life, are you actually seeing there be a difference?
I mean, look, we have stayed around as long as we have, for almost 30 years, because we pivot very well. We're small. We don't, you know, we, or as my partner, Pam Koffler, my business partner, would say, we're like cockroaches. We just survived the nuclear blast by eating the plaster or whatever. But I think it's because we just keep, we're like, all right, independent film is, you know, going in that direction. What can we do that feels still true to us, but is acknowledging this other, you know, this other kind of storytelling?
It's interesting, because it's sort of like, I was talking to someone about how, in a way, independent film, and that's what's so good, that you're making, you've got five films.
I don't get why, given the current climate.
It's crazy. Because independent film got sort of subsumed by television. And like, a lot of the interesting filmmakers went to television, and I mean, I guess in a way, that was when you made Mildred Pierce, that was kind of what you were doing. And that's where, but it's so pleasing and optimistic to me to hear that you're, got these great films with these great people, great artists, and it's they're still to be viewed in the cinema.
They are, but you know, I think that what we really have to start thinking of too, though, is what makes something theatrical. Like, what is
what's the reason?
Because
to go
that
and watch it,
you know, and when I speak to groups, you know, or you know, I was just in Oregon at some film festival in Bend. Sometimes, you know, someone will lament that theatrical is dying. I'm like, but when did you last go?
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And what made you go? You know, was it the actors? Was it not, you know, fear of missing out, fear of hearing about the story? I mean, right now it's, you know, it's interesting to me that television has become so destinationless. You know what I mean? Like, that notion that we all watch the same thing,
at the same time.
Can all talk about it together the next day.
Yeah.
And if you missed it, you missed it.
Right.
Secession was maybe a little like that.
Yes.
You know?
It's interesting. I think I heard the trend for binging and putting things out all in a lump, a dump. is ebbing, and actually the whole thing of the sort of, you know, the feeling of having to wait a week
and to savor
the savor, yes. Yeah, right. The yearning is something that people are thinking is actually more of a positive thing, and people might like it.
Yeah, because the thing about the binge is you get a little overwhelmed.
Yeah. Mm.
You know, like I started to binge Russian Doll and then realized I preferred it, giving myself a little time.
Yeah, me too.
To think about.
Yeah. Hmm. I love to have a break.
I love like picking something up ages later, actually.
Mm-hmm. You know,
I think that's really nice if it's a good story. Although that's also why we talked about this before. Have you ever watched Game of Thrones?
Mm-mm.
And another one.
Me neither.
And I tried.
It's the first time I've ever been in a room with people, all of whom, who haven't seen it.
Like the underground right now. None of us have watched Game of Thrones.
We can go and live on the low line or whatever.
I was at Marie's Crisis the night of the Game of Thrones finale.
Oh.
And somebody said to somebody else, which was the gayest night at Marie's Crisis, because it's not really gay anymore.
Oh, is it not?
Well, it's got a lot of bachelorette parties and a lot
will
of...
You,
like,
will yeah. you do a quick explanation of Marie's Crisis? Because people will want to know.
Marie's Crisis is a piano bar, a sing-along piano bar in the West Village that I started going to like 30 years ago.
It's love like it. Stepping back in time to the 70s.
Right.
It feels like you're in a period film.
Right, exactly.
And it's just got terrible liquor.
Oh, it's like
a crashing
worse.
Headache when I go there.
I think we should start bringing a flask. Just like, you know, keep buying soda water, so
exactly.
that, you know, et cetera, so that we can
exactly.
pay the duty on your flask.
Yes, it's got that funny, it's all dark wood, and there's a little, you know, bar around the piano, so people can, all the stalwarts. And it's just show tunes non-stop.
Yeah.
And all the stalwarts there, and you kind of can you give money to the man, and you play you a song, and you can, the whole bar sings along.
You sing along, and there's always like a row of very serious people right around the piano, right? Who
don't
tough to everyone
them.
Else.
Yeah, they're, you know, if you, yeah. once, years ago, I was there, and this is so embarrassing. So I, you know, it was before I did Cabaret again. So it's like, you know, I did Cabaret 4 or 5 years ago. So it's like, it was 10 years ago.
Mm.
In between, you know, and I'm there, and Darren Criss is with me, but he loves to sing. He actually opened a sing-along bar in LA
yes.
called it Stamp Tramp Grannies. And it's such fun.
I love
and,
it.
And we were there together, and they never normally do this, but they said, "Oh, Alan and Darren, would you sing a song together?" Because they don't sort of like, you know, if celebrities come, you just sing along.
Yes,
right.
Yes. Exactly.
I like that. It's very egalitarian.
Exactly.
But for some reason, it must have been a quiet night. They asked us if we would sing a song, and I was drunk, and I was like, "Well, what could we sing? I don't know anything." And Darren said, "Oh, remember I told you that I could have this haunting harmony to I Don't Care Much, which is a song that I sang in Cabaret, the very dark in the second act." And I was like, "Oh, great, yeah, that's right." And I mean, he told me about this, but we'd never done it until this point. And so he played the piano and sang the haunting harmonies to I Don't Care Much. I started to sing the song, could not remember the words. Could not remember a fucking word. And all these queens are kind of mouthing the words at me and whilst clutching their pearls at the same time in absolute horror that I couldn't, Alan Cumming can't remember the words to an Alan Cumming song. And it was just so embarrassing. And they were feeding me the lines, and it was awful.
Wow.
I felt like I'd let down my tribe, you know.
Yes.
Have you been back since?
Yes, but I always keep a low profile. Yes. I go in disguise.
Full disguise. So you were there for the Game of Thrones night?
I was there the night that Game of Thrones was premiering, and somebody, you know, one guy said to the other guy, "Aren't you going to go home for Game of Thrones?" And he was like, "Fosse Verdon is my Game of Thrones."
Yeah.
Like, are you kidding?
That's hilarious.
So,
yeah.
No, I've never seen it.
That's the end of part one of our lovely chat with Christine Vachon. Please go to the feed and listen to part two. You won't be disappointed.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Powered by Spirit Studios.